From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with philosopher Benjamin Weicker about his provocative volume, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World, and 5 Others That Didn't Help. Let's now join Hank as he introduces Dr. Weicker.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged. It is the podcast that is bringing to you some of the most interesting, informative, and I would say inspirational people on the planet. Today, I want to bring to you a conversation with Dr. Benjamin Weicker, who received his PhD from Vanderbilt University. He's also a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute. He's written some of my favorite books, including A Meaningful World, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature, and the book that we have been really excited about putting in the hands of people, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help. This book, available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can check it out on the web at equip.org. Dr. Benjamin Weicker joins me for the second time on the Hank Unplugged podcast. Great to have you with us again, Benjamin.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back, very glad.
We are having so much fun with your book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help. This is incredibly important in that many people do not understand how today we are living in the midst of, well, maybe 500 years of a buildup to the post-truth culture that we're experiencing right now.
Exactly. And it's the old saying that ideas have consequences, but that means that bad ideas have consequences, and they're bad consequences. And that's especially unpleasant when people don't realize the nature and the caliber of the ideas that they've inherited. They just accept them as if it were the air, you know, that they're breathing, or like a fish in water. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, to wake people up and say, you know, you don't have to think this way. Here are the people that defined this wrong way to go. And the more you understand it, the more free you're going to become of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of these books are so draconian that you can hardly imagine that they would have been written, but they have been written by intellectuals. And you think perhaps the most malicious book ever written was The Manifesto of the Communist Party. I think you said something to the effect that seldom has a book so screwed up the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go just on body count alone, you know, you're talking well over 100 million people who were inspired or who are the result of the Marxist inspiration about bringing in this communist utopia, which happened to a need to, you know, really consume more people. More people died from Marxism than any other cause by far, way more than has ever been caused by Christianity. Yet the, you know, it still has a hold on at least some of the intellectual elite in the universities, and it comes in new forms. It just keeps coming back. It's like the Hydra you can't kill.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the consequences for our society are pretty significant when you start to look at books like The Prince by Machiavelli, who you say was the original ends justify the means philosopher. He had this famous dictum that said, we cannot guide our lives by what is good. Instead, we have to guide our lives by what is effective.
Yes. And once you make that change, then there's nothing limiting what you do, because whatever is effective is effective. It might be effective to kill, you know, 10 million people. It might be effective to pretend you're religious and take over the church. You know, it might, there's all kinds of things that could be effective, you know, kill babies. There's no end or limit to what means you can use to get what you want. And the thing about Machiavelli is, in order to set forth that doctrine, he had to reject Christianity because no one could put forth that doctrine and care about his immortal soul. He must believe that he doesn't have one. And Machiavelli really is our first great modern atheist, and atheism undergirds then all the later the ends justify the means kinds of arguments in politics and ethics.
What do you make of where we are in human history at this point? We're sitting in the wake of a mass murder that took place in Las Vegas, another mass murder that took place in a small church in Texas. We have these waves of terrorism that come in like the ocean brings in its waves. We have the undertow of migration without assimilation, I've often likened to a python swallowing its prey with a long and slow digestion. You look at all of these kinds of things in toto, and they paint a pretty scary picture, but a picture that in some ways is predictable.
It is, yes. One thing that you find out with all the people, the books that I treat on the list, and actually, you know, it's not only 10, but I give you an extra 5, all of those are in some way, have given over to the atheist side. So atheism undergirds the transformation in modernity from a Christian culture to a secular culture. And it's not just a secular culture, it's a reductionist, materialist culture where there really isn't anything to live for but this world. And so, you know, you find with this person in Texas that, you know, he's got his diatribe against Christians and thinks that religion is, you know, the most awful thing, and he's going to show how awful it is by a mass murder. And here you have what? You know, here's the convoluted reason that you found in Marxism. You know, God is the cause of all our horrors. If we just get rid of religion, everything would be wonderful, and we're going to kill all these people just to show you how wonderful, you know, Marxism is. You find this again and again, this pattern of a twisted understanding that results from the rejection of God and from a, you know, release from any kind of a moral compass in order to make this world into some kind of a utopia.
Yeah, and there is no such thing in the materialist perspective as right or wrong, good or bad. And so ultimately, if you are sitting in classrooms and you are hearing lectures on just rank materialism, you ultimately come to the conclusion that you might as well bite the bullet. This is something that many of the modern day philosophers and professors are doing. They're actually biting the bullet and saying there is no good, there is no evil. History amounts to nothing. It's just a function of molecules in motion, and therefore do as ye will, the Wiccan code.
Yeah, exactly. And these professors, these tenured radicals, so to speak, believe that they're on the cutting edge. You know, they've just discovered this, and, you know, they're in the vanguard of the intelligentsia. And as I make clear in the book, you know, well, that thinking has been going on quite some time. All you need to do is go back to Thomas Hobbes, Leviathan, published in 1651, and he says that very bluntly, hey, you know, the world is just atoms in motion. There is no good or evil. There's just getting what you want, and you have the absolute right to get whatever you want in whatever way you can get it. And the thing about that universe, as he makes clear, is it's purposeless. That is, there's not really any goal to what you're doing except trying to, you know, get whatever pleasure you can while your, you know, molecules are still intact, and avoid whatever pain you can while your molecules are still intact. But it's a meaningless, purposeless universe. And so, you know, all of the so-called cutting-edge intelligentsia declaring nihilism in the 20th and the 21st century, they're really just great-great-grandsons of Thomas Hobbes. Now, that should make us want to study Thomas Hobbes and say, well, why did he say these things? What reason did he have? Because maybe he's just wrong, but these people have been influenced by his teaching. So if we can study the great founders of the evil frameworks like that, then again, we can become free of them and question them and say, why do I have to think that way? Maybe it's not true.
So a lot of people would say the ultimate good we could do for civilization in that ideas have consequences is we can have a massive book burning, start burning all of these books that have had these negative impacts on postmodern civilization. But you say, no, book burning is not the solution. The actual solution would be to read these books cover to cover and understand what they have to say and why what they have to say is dangerous. And in essence, that's why you wrote 10 books that screwed up the world. I mean, you're giving people sort of a thumbnail sketch of why these books have the impact that they've had.
Yeah, and a lot of people's confusion is that they don't have the kind of clarity that the great founders of modern bad thought had. The reason you want to study these people, and this is everyone, you know, Machiavelli, The Prince, Rene Descartes' Discourse and Method, Hobbes' Leviathan, we got Rousseau, Marx, all these other ones. You want to read them because they had a clarity of mind. And so many of them are profoundly evil. That is, if you want to see what the real position is, if you want to see what it entails, if you want to, you know, remove the fuzziness and get to the people who really understood what they were saying, you want to read these books. So, you know, they actually, oddly enough, aren't read cover to cover by the very people who are touting the ideas that come from them, and it's very unlikely that many of them have even read them. They're just, you know, like third or fourth generation, you know, secondary and tertiary thinkers themselves. They think they're original, but they're not. So if you can go back to those original thinkers, and that's what I argue in the book you should do, then you can learn, oh, that's why they think that. Those are the ramifications of it. This is what it really means to live in a world without good and evil. That's why one of the people that I work with is Friedrich Nietzsche's Beyond Good and Evil. He understood that very clearly. And you know, so I'm trying to say, this is what Nietzsche really thought, because a lot of people don't understand how radical he really was. They want to just kind of have a puppy dog version of some of these philosophers like Nietzsche, and they need to understand, you know, this is what it really means to say that there is no God. You're going beyond good and evil. There is no good and evil. It's simply made by the most powerful person.
Yeah, Thomas Carlyle, and you write about this in the introduction to your book. He was an eminent Scottish essayist and a longtime philosopher. And he was once scolded at a dinner party, as you lay this out, for chattering about books. And the scolding was something to the effect of ideas. Mr. Carlyle, ideas, nothing but ideas. And then he replied, yeah, there was once a man who was named Rousseau who wrote a book containing nothing but ideas, but the second edition of that book was bound in the skins of those who laughed at the first. And of course, Carlyle was right. And the ultimate or the quintessential example of his rightness is in Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who wrote a book that inspired the ruthlessness of the French Revolution and even more destructive things after that. Now, a couple of things I want to bring out from what you've written there. One is, when you think about the French Revolution and you know nothing about it whatsoever except seeing it idealized in Les Mis, you might think, well, French Revolution was good. You have to have some sense of history if you're not going to repeat it.
Exactly. And you know what you have in the French Revolution, it's really the first modern totalitarian regime which tried to eliminate Christianity. In other words, before that you had all kinds of people attacking Christianity, but you didn't have a political regime simply dedicated to its elimination. And so it wasn't just a poor against the rich thing. That was part of it, and you find that in Rousseau's Second Discourse. But it's also a Christianity is bad. It's so bad it has to be removed, and it has to be done by force, and then it has to be replaced by a civil religion that is one that is entirely aimed at the secular state. And so what happened in the French Revolution was you had a totalitarian regime come into being that literally was trying to exterminate Christianity and provide a really weird natural religion, and by that it was rather an unnatural religion, but you know, you're trying to replace saint days with days having to do with, you know, carpentry and you know, certain kinds of flowers and trees, and starting over from, you know, year one and rejecting Christianity. So you're wiping Christianity out of history, but you're also murdering tens of thousands of priests and nuns and Catholics. Anyone in your way that still holds to anything but the truths of the new secular regime. So that's the predecessor of the Marxist regimes that came in and tried to do the same thing. And this time, instead of murdering tens of thousands, they murdered tens of millions.
That's incredible when you think of those statistics. Sometimes they just sort of go by very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, you can relate yourself to a few things, maybe one or two murders, but when you think about 100 million or more, it's very, very difficult.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Benjamin Weicker. If you've ever heard of a great books collection, well, here are their evil opposites. Machiavelli, Marx, Lenin, and Hitler are just a few of the authors whose writings have bled into the history books with their bloody conquests backed by disastrous ideas. But history is written every day, and these ideas are still influencing the world in which we live. As Christians, being familiar with these ideas and their influence in our world will allow us to better counter them with the call of Christ. That's why Dr. Benjamin Weicker wrote 10 books that screwed up the world and 5 others that didn't help. To receive your copy of 10 books that screwed up the world as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Luke chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. While many of you will soon enter the hustle and bustle of the holiday season, Hank Hanegraaff has penned The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season to ensure that just as you prepare your home for Christmas, you likewise prepare your heart. Order The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season by calling 888-7000-274 or by going online to www.equip.org. Also available is The Heart of Christmas audiobook, dramatically read by Hank Hanegraaff. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. For many Christians, the reality of God is so obvious and undeniable that we're amazed anyone could seriously doubt it. And yet, many do. How can we help such people recognize what seems to be so apparent to us? James N. Anderson highlights 6 aspects of everyone's life that can be explained only if God exists. Other topics include, was there a Jewish temple in ancient Jerusalem? The irony of 13 Reasons Why, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank invited ethicist Benjamin Weicker to discuss 10 books that screwed up the world. Let's rejoin Hank and Professor Weicker in their conversation.
I was in Cambodia last year.
Oh.
And I was at the killing fields themselves, and they have these great memorials. And when you look at these memorials, within the memorials themselves, they have literally tens of thousands of skulls of people who were murdered as a result of an idea.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's Marxism. That idea was Marxism, and that's small in comparison to what was not really next door, but it's close to there in China. Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't think we'll ever know. 50, 60 million? You know, how can we even count them up? The numbers just dwarf. You know, if you add together those numbers killed by communism, it's more than all the other wars in all the previous centuries combined. And yet you still have atheists saying that religion is the cause of all our misery. That's amazing. How can you say that? You know, how can you think that the, you know, there's nothing ever been approaching this horrific destruction of human life? And if you add on top of that abortion and now euthanasia, you can't even fathom it. With this kind of destruction, yet the secular left still wants to maintain that that taking God out of the public realm will have no ill effects. In fact, it'll make things much more peaceful and better for everyone.
Yeah, it's interesting that you have a liberals. Actually siding with Islam, saying Islam is a religion of peace because the real danger to Western civilizations, in their view, is Christianity.
Exactly. And that's been a kind of a trope that they've been repeating. You can actually bring it all the way back to Machiavelli, but Rousseau was another big one on this. But the 1700 Enlightenment got in kind of a love affair with Islam, mainly because they wanted to reject Christianity. They had been rejecting Christianity since the early 1500s, so they saw Christianity as the worst enemy, and that meant that any other religion had to be better. And they liked Islam, I think, in part because, you know, it got rid of Trinitarianism, which they thought was irrational, but also it took Christianity as the enemy. And finally, I think they like the sexual mores of Islam in the sense of, it in some senses, very much looser than Christianity and allowing for polygamy. So you have a lot of weird things coming together, and also sexual slavery. So, you know, you have a weird sort of love affair of the left with Islam, which refuses to see for what it is. So they're looking at Christians in Europe now still as folks are the cause of all our problems. You're so intolerant. And they're ushering in Muslims who are bent on destroying both Christians and the secularized society, and they're utterly blinded to that obvious fact.
Yeah, you know, to be fair, though, I mean, if you go back, and I think you've written about this, if you go back to the Reformation, there were Christians at that point in time that looked at Islam as the acts of God's judgment and therefore thought that perhaps Islam was better because anything was better than the medieval Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And so they saw Islam as maybe a good in the hands of God.
That is true, actually, and I have a chapter on this in a book that I just recently released, The Reformation 500 Years Later in Islam. And indeed, in the Reformation, it was actually Luther and Calvin who both considered Islam to be the sword of God or the rod of God's wrath, in the same way that the ancient Assyrians or Babylonians were. So they thought that the entirely corrupt Catholic Church was the cause of the problems and the reason that Islam was about to break into Europe and destroy Christendom. And Martin Luther himself wrote actually saw that a a translation of the Quran was published, and he himself provided the preface, and that was his point, that Islam is the rod of God's punishment, and it's actually morally superior, not only to the Roman Catholic Church, but to, oddly enough, to all Christians anywhere, showing for Luther, hey, it didn't matter, works don't matter. A sign of this is that Islam has wonderful moral works, but they're not saved. So works don't matter. So it was a weird way of treating Islam at the time, and that helped to soften up the assessment of Islam by later secular thinkers.
Do you think that we need to have a more full-orbed understanding of the Reformation? I mean, it's sort of been idealized, and a lot of people are celebrating 500 years of Reformation theology. But on the other hand, there was a whole lot more going on if you understand the cultural circumstances of the 16th century.
Oh, absolutely. And one of those things is the place of Islam, that it was, you know, literally about to overwhelm Europe. I mean, everyone saw it pretty much as the last century the Christians would be around, because, you know, they were just looming in the borders over in modern-day Turkey and rushing into southern and eastern Europe. So that was one aspect of it. But another aspect that confuses things is that atheism had already begun in the 1400s at a kind of modern revival by recovering the ancient pagan atheists, and was spreading rather rapidly from Italy all over Europe. And the goal of that new atheism that was spreading out was to eliminate Christianity, first by stealth and then later openly. So Marxism is the full flower of that atheism that arose in that time. And if that weren't enough to complexify things, there's the rise of nationalism, where kings, and this was in all over Europe, but particularly in England and in France and in the various German principalities, these political leaders wanted their own national churches under their own power. So even if Martin Luther had never come along, they wanted their own national church, that is, not a universal church, but a state church under their control. But that creates a kind of, you know, politicized version of Christianity that is one convenient for the rulers. So there were already forces aiming at the destruction of Christianity or the splintering of Christianity, even independently of what went on with the corruption within the Catholic Church, which was very real, and the splintering effect of Protestantism.
Apart from that, I mean, you wrote a book called, I guess you referenced it as The Reformation 500 Years Later. In that book, you list a number of things that we need to know about the Reformation. If you were to maybe cite the first or second thing that you think is critical for us to know, what would that be?
Well, one of the things is something we need to know now, and that's why the title was The Reformation 500 Years Later. What do we need to know now? What we need to know now, and this is related to what I just went over, is that the Reformation is coming to a close because good Catholics and good Protestants find themselves again and again on the same side in the cultural battles, because secular liberalism is trying to destroy all Christians, not just Catholics, not just Protestants, but all Christians. So we're finding ourselves side by side, and there's a new kind of friendship and unity springing out of that that really could bring the Reformation to a close. Another common, another thing that has the same effect is the just mentioned attack on Islam. Islam doesn't care if you're Catholic or Protestant or what kind of Protestant you are or whether you're Orthodox. It's just trying to wipe the infidel out. And so once again, Catholics and Protestants and Greek Orthodox are finding themselves with a common enemy, and so we have a common friendship. And so one of the things that people need to know is we're faced with a new opportunity to bring about a Christian unity once again. And we can do that if we understand clearly what happened in the original Reformation, how all sides made mistakes, and how we can climb back out of the hole that we created And those are the other 11 things that you need to know in the book.
Yeah, it's a great book. And, you know, let me say something about what you just said. I mean, you're saying that there should be some harmony between Catholics, between Orthodox and Protestant. If we don't hang together, we're going to hang separately.
Exactly.
That kind of idea. But there are people, and I was thinking about a guy that I've known for many, many years, John MacArthur, realizing my conversion to Eastern Orthodoxy and saying that this is a religion that is to be cursed, not to be joined. Because this is a religion that teaches a crass system of works righteousness. So I think there's a sense in which we need some education within the Christian world so that people understand the soteriologies of other groups of Christians instead of just broad brushing them.
We'll pick up Hank's conversation with Professor Benjamin Weicker in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank and CRI in the battle for life and truth and receive your copy of Benjamin Weicker's provocative volume, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help, as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with ethicist Benjamin Weicker on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man.
I want to talk for just a few moments about Nietzsche. He is someone who's had an incredible impact on human civilization, particularly with a book titled Beyond Good and Evil, written in 1886. And his contrast, as I've said so many times, is the mother of clarity. It's instructive to note that while Darwin championed survival of the fittest, Friedrich Nietzsche advocated for supremacy of the fittest. And that is precisely why Nietzsche had such an animus towards all things Christian. In fact, in centering on divine love for the poor and the downtrodden, Christian charity served only, from his perspective, to worsen the European race. And Nietzsche had little regard for the weak. He didn't care about the tired and the poor. Instead, he was consumed by something else. That something else was forging a world ruled by the will to power. And you see that in his letters. He was obsessed with striking a destructive blow against the historic Christian faith. He fancied himself, he called himself, in fact, the anti-Christian or the Nietzschean Caesar. In 1889, he penned a book by that very title, Antichrist. And then he descended, into the nadir of madness, like an incessant drumbeat. He was resigned to chanting, I'm dead because I'm stupid. I'm stupid because I'm dead. I'm dead because I'm stupid. I'm stupid because I'm dead, over and over again. And then by August 1900, Nietzsche was indeed dead. His influence, however, continues on to this very moment in history. As the apostle of atheism, he prefigured the darkest century the world has ever known. A century that may only be eclipsed, perhaps by the one that we are now engaged in. For further detail on the life and legacy of Friedrich Nietzsche, who famously dubbed Christianity a calamitous ignorance, you must read a book by a friend of mine titled 10
Books That Screwed Up the World. This written by Dr. Benjamin Weicker opens your eyes to the graphic reality that ideas of consequences and bad ideas have very bad consequences.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Hank Hanegraaff explains that while politically correct culture is quick to point out discrimination and abuse of women in other respects, there has been a deafening silence when it comes to the systematic oppression of women under Islamic Sharia law. Other topics include God made us so that he could be our father in a way that reflects his fatherly relationship to his only son, the rational inescapability of God. Was there a Jewish temple in ancient Jerusalem? And much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Luke chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. While many of you will soon enter the hustle and bustle of the holiday season, Hank Hanegraaff has penned The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season to ensure that just as you prepare your home for Christmas, you likewise prepare your heart. Order The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season by calling 888-7000-274 or by going online to www.equip.org. Also available is The Heart of Christmas audiobook, dramatically read by Hank Hanegraaff. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank invited ethicist Benjamin Weicker to discuss 10 books that screwed up the world and 5 others that didn't help. Let's rejoin Hank's conversation with Dr. Weicker.
We need some education within the Christian world so that people understand the soteriologies of other groups of Christians instead of just broad brushing them.
Yes, and think, you know, I like to use this image. Think of us all being in a castle as in the Lord of the Rings, and the orcs are about to overtake us, and there we are standing side by side, all of these Protestants, Catholics, and the Orthodox. Now, how do we want to carry on our common task? Do we want to be fighting each other over these differences, or do we want to understand these differences more deeply and, as you say, see why it is each side held this or that position and historically came to that and what they really mean, and more importantly, what they don't mean? You know, one of the things that the printing press did at the time of Luther, it began, you know, about 50 years before Luther came on the scene, but it's sort of like modern Twitter and Facebook. It made people say things too quickly and harden into positions and portray the other person in ways that weren't actually true, didn't go to the heart of it. So we need to undo that, and part of what would help, and you're pointing to this, is, well, let's understand what's really going on. You know, let's really look deeply at history. Look at the deep history of the Orthodox. Look at the deep history of the Catholic Church, of what happened with Luther and the Anabaptists and the Calvinists, and let's try to get some understanding of why certain positions may have been held and what we might do, not to just blur the edges. We don't want to do that, but to say, you know, well, maybe it's not quite what we thought it was. Maybe, for example, Greek Orthodox Church or the Roman Catholic Church really aren't engaged in works righteousness. Maybe if we read the documents, we'd find that's not what's going on. So, you know, there's a lot of misinformation and little hardening of the intellectual arteries out there. So I don't want to make it seem as if the task before us is an easy one. But, wow, you know, when you're getting attacked by Islam in Europe, it should soften up your ability to talk to your fellow Christians a bit. The same thing true with when we're fighting against gay marriage and abortion and who knows what other atrocity in regard to pornography. Wow, you know, we're trying to save marriage. I think we can come to some agreement about saving marriage, even if we can't quite come to an agreement about whether it's a sacrament or not.
You bring up abortion. I can't help but in concert with that. I mean, if you're doing a word association, when I think about abortion, I immediately think Sanger, Margaret Sanger.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think about applied science, the applied science of eugenics. She was on the forefront of the eugenics movement, and this is a movement that had enormous implications for human civilization.
Absolutely, and this is Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. And speaking of banning books, her book, The Pivot of Civilization, is one book you can't get from Planned Parenthood. They don't even want you to know it exists. If Planned Parenthood could burn one book in this world, it would be Margaret Sanger's Pivot of Civilization. Because you read it, and the hair on your head will stand up straight. I treat Mein Kampf, too, Hitler's Mein Kampf. And I think that Sanger's book is worse, because the way that she talks about people is, look, there's the good people, and then there's the biological waste. Now, I'm not making that term up. That's her term. There are the imbeciles and the morons, the biological waste, who should never have been born. And the best thing we can do is at least not let them breed. And that's why we want birth control. So the origin of the birth control movement for Margaret Sanger, the foundress of Planned Parenthood, was eugenic. We've got all these no good people breeding, and we need to stop it. We need to stop them, and she was part of the worldwide eugenic movement that also flowed into Nazi Germany, but was all not just in Germany, it was in England, all over America, and exists today. You know, Planned Parenthood still does the same thing, but they do it through, you know, prenatal screening and abortion. So they're doing the same thing that the Nazis did, you know, killing the unborn for any of a number of reasons. Oh, you know, it's a boy and I wanted a girl. It might have Down syndrome. Oh, it might have this disease or that disease, or I just don't want it now. It's just as ruthless as the Nazis, and it's going on all around the country. And that's Margaret Sanger's Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, and this is one person I think people ought to be more familiar with.
Yeah.
And also familiar with the fact that if you think about eugenics, a lot of people will think about that applied science within Nazi Germany, but you think about who was funding this. You have philanthropies like the Carnegie and Rockefeller Foundations.
Yeah.
You have research at Stanford and Harvard and Yale and Princeton. You have legislation which is passed in states ranging from North Carolina to New York to California. And it's even backed as a science by the National Academy of Sciences and the American Medical Association. And back then, those who would resist the idea were considered backward and
ignorant, and it was the German scientists for a while before this eventually reached its nadir. It was the German scientists who were thought of as being progressive and forward-thinking.
Absolutely, yeah, and we don't want to, again, just blame the Germans. This was, this was the so-called progressive dicta. You know, this is what we should be doing. We need to take evolution into our own hands. And this was understood to be the most scientific, leading-edge thinking. So it wasn't backward folk who thought this, who were the real racists and the real eugenicists. It was the leading scientists in all the universities in Europe and America, and hence also a lot of research and funding came from those sources that you mentioned. Wherever there's something bad happening, the Rockefeller Foundation is usually behind it, or the Ford Foundation, so you find their bad money thrown around in there. But the reason this was understood to be the latest scientific way to go, the whole eugenics movement, is because it has its roots in Charles Darwin. And this is one other book that, please don't burn it, may everyone read it cover to cover. It's Charles Darwin's Descent of Man, the book Charles Darwin wrote after The Origin of Species to make clear what the evolutionary implications were for human nature. And one of those implications that he spelled out very clearly is, look, we've got to stop standing in the way of natural selection. Natural selection eliminates the weak. When you stand in the way of natural selection and you have this perverse notion of charity, such as one would get from Christianity, then you keep saving the weak, and that dilutes our evolutionary climb up the slopes and drags us back down. So Charles Darwin was the scientist, the leading scientist, and a lot of other scientists came from him, defining the eugenics movement, because it's really just taking evolution into your own hands, and eugenics is artificial selection for the sake of breeding better and better human beings and eliminating as Margaret Sanger would say, the dead weight of human waste. So this awful idea really did come from Darwin, but it spread all over Europe. And Adolf Hitler is one way that it manifested itself, but not the only way. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, another way. But it pervaded everywhere. And so, as you're saying, you know, you were considered backward if you questioned eugenics, and that's turning good and evil upside down.
You think about Darwin, and you've written about this, but one of the famous quotes that I recall from your book, written by The Descent of Man, where you're commenting on Darwin's incredible applications to human beings in terms of this applied science. He says, there is reason to believe that vaccination has preserved thousands who from a weak constitution would formerly have succumbed to smallpox. Thus, the weak members of a civilized society propagate their kind. No one who has attended to the breeding of domestic animals will doubt that this must be highly injurious to the race of man. It is surprising how soon a want of care, or care wrongly directed, leads to the degeneration of a domestic race. But excepting in the case of man himself, hardly anyone is so ignorant as to allow his worst animals to breed. I mean, I don't know how it gets clearer than that.
Yeah, it does. I mean, how this is not difficult to discern, the evil inherent in this. And we nobody wants to say Charles Darwin would ever say something like that. And you'll find scientists trying to distance Darwin from the eugenics movement and say, well, that's not Darwin. He was just about biology. Well, that's just not true. Now, they may be ignorant scientists, which is likely, but they also may know, and they're trying to cover it up. And my suspicion is they just don't know, and that's why I think that Darwin's Descent of Man should be required reading in every high school, along with Margaret Sanger's The Pivot of Civilization, because they go hand in hand.
Here's a book that was required reading back in the early 20th century, a high school biology text that talked about the improvement of man and says that if the stock of domesticated animals can be improved, it is not unfair to ask if the health and vigor of future generations of men and women on Earth might not be improved by applying to them the law of selection, and then goes on to find a remedy. The remedy is that if such people were lower animals, we would probably kill them off to prevent them from spreading. We do have the remedy of separating the sexes in asylums or other places and in various ways preventing intermarriage. And the possibilities of perpetuating such a low and degenerate race, remedies of this source have been tried successfully in Europe and are now meeting with success in this country. And there's sort of a really interesting backstory to this. We're all sort of, well, pretty much everyone is familiar with Inherit the Wind.
Yes.
And it makes, well, Christians look like bigoted ignoramuses, and it makes the people who believe in eugenics look like, well, blessed intellectuals.
Yes.
But in reality, this book played a part in that film, but not the part we hear about.
Exactly. It's sort of maddening. I want to get together a bunch of donors and make a remake of Inherit the Wind when they just stop right in the middle and they read from the textbook. That's George Hunter's textbook that was actually at stake in the original Scopes trial.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with ethicist Benjamin Weicker in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift Benjamin Weicker's provocative volume, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World, and 5 Others That Didn't Help, or any of the other resources mentioned on the broadcast today, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. For many Christians, the reality of God is so obvious and undeniable that we're amazed anyone could seriously doubt it. and yet many do. How can we help such people recognize what seems to be so apparent to us? James N. Anderson highlights six aspects of everyone's life that can be explained only if God exists. Other topics include, was there a Jewish temple in ancient Jerusalem? The irony of 13 reasons why, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org.